out in front of the other guy. Come up front where the professor is.
So that we can have a nice talk to you.
Okay. I'm sorry. Who's going to introduce us? Thank you, my friend Ron. He brought us back out here, so let's hear it for Ron.
Yay!
And feel free to take pictures as we talk, et cetera. I'm not crazy about video cameras, though. Oh. I don't think anybody has a video camera, which is good.
No video? Okay.
I don't think, do they? Just let us know, and we can... And the reason I don't like videos because... I can be very inappropriate sometimes. I'm a teacher. Okay. Turn it over to Ron.
Okay. Well, I would like to welcome Marta and Kristen and Mark Goddard back.
Thank you.
To DragonCon. I think it's good. We're all in here from Austin State.
Thank you.
We've been working together for about a year now, making sure that they got back to DragonCon. You were here, what, 2 years ago?
2 years ago. And we were supposed to be here last year for...
Yeah.
I was here 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. I was here 2 years ago.
I was here again before sometime, long time.
You were here with me at Dixie Trek.
Well, that's a long time. How many years?
That was 16 years ago.
I'm still alive.
you're still kicking. Tomorrow you're going to meet my daughter that my wife was pregnant when you saw her last.
No kidding.
Yeah. She's going to be here tomorrow.
Your wife's not pregnant still.
No, she's not pregnant still.
That's great. 16-year-old. I got a 15-year-old. You got a 16-year-old. Marta's got an 11-year-old. She takes care. Everything's great. Well, we're going to have a good time. I'll tell some stories. I love telling stories. And Marta will tell a story, too, or whatever. We'll take questions. And I think you want to run this, but the best way is to...
If you just want to open it up to questions, we'll just...
I think what I'm going to do is take a couple minutes, just tell you what we're doing now. An update on where we're at. Do you want to go first, Marta? No, you want me to go first. I'll pull the string.
As I look blankly.
I'll pull the string and she'll say something. Now, listen.
Excuse me while I kill him.
Hey, listen. What am I doing? Well, it was 15 years ago that I left California, left Hollywood, and decided that I wanted to... do something else with my life. It's a career change. I was 55 at the time. I went back to Boston, where my hometown is. It's my hometown, and I went down there, and I went back to college and got my degree in master's in special education. And I've been working 15 years at the same school. It's called the F.L. Chamberlain School. And the kids live at the facilities, and they have behavioral problems. And I think I work very well with them. I know I do, right? Because I love to communicate with young people that between the ages of 11 and 18 that are going through some tough time in their life. It's a bad age anyway, but when you've been, how do I put it? They're at-risk kids. When you've been abused, et cetera, when you were young, and you have flashbacks and those kind of things, you know, it's pretty heavy. So I'm very gentle with the kids, although sometimes we have to restrain kids because they flashback and we can't let them hurt themselves or us, and I've been hurt a number of times, but I'm still doing it. So that's what I do. And
what do you teach there, Mark?
What do I teach?
Yeah, drama?
Well, I, as an elective, I do drama. In the summertime, I did golf and tennis this summer, and on Thursdays and Fridays, and during the week, I teach, math and science. And,
oh, boy.
But I have it pretty good now. They use me to go around to all the classes when the teachers can't come in. And we have 120 kids there. And so I get to know all the kids. So my value is when kids go having a problem, I can see it right away. I can de-escalate them, take them for a walk, calm them down, find out what's going on. Although all our kids have therapists. We have five kids, a therapist to every five kids we have. So it's a good program, and it's worthwhile. It's worthwhile. The kids do well. Some kids don't do well. Some kids never turn it around, but most of them do. So that's what I'm doing, and I'm blessed. I went back there, and I went back to retire, but I met my wife at college, and now I have a 15-year-old. I couldn't keep it where it belonged. No, I have four older children. That's last. I have four older children, who have a daughter in California, two daughters in California, and a son in California, and a son in Hong Kong, who works with that, runs the whole Bloomberg Asian thing over there, the Bloomberg News deal, the whole television package. So he graduated from Georgetown. He's doing well. That's about it. And Marta, why don't you pick it up?
All right. I'm glad to be here, number one. Thank you, Ron, for letting me arranging all of this, because I always love to come and meet people, new people, some older people. I don't know old. I mean, you know, fans, previous fans. And it's always a little bit of a break for me, because I am raising my 11-year-old granddaughter. Actually, I co-parent with our daughter, and who 10 years ago had some problems, and so Lena came to live with us, and pretty much I was a mother at 15. I said, oh my gosh, of an infant, and it was quite a change in my life. I had ambitions of being an artist, because I paint, and in fact I do sell to interior designers in Los Angeles. But it's been one of the most wonderful experiences of my life, because it really keeps me in touch with Disney Channel and all of the new groups and stars, Lindsay Lohan and all et al. And it, but not only that, it's, I think I'm a much better parent at this age, and I'm more patient and a lot more strict. But as I said, we co-parent with my daughter, who's who comes in here a couple of times a week, and she's more like an older sister. But so she, Lena's starting school on Tuesday, so I'm going to be leaving late tomorrow night, so I can be cracking the whip on Monday to get all of her stuff together. I still do a lot of theater. Actually, I work with children now. I coach kids in theater and in community theater. Really love doing that. There are a lot of children whose parents try and get them into theater because they're shy, and I work with them, and essentially I tell them, this is the best thing you can do, because you can be whoever you want to be. And all of a sudden I see these lights going on, and I tell them, you don't have to worry anymore about what you know, about who you are, if you feel shy about yourself, because, you know, you pretend to be somebody else. And I see a lot of life changes, as Mark does, you know, working with kids. I also, you know, sew the costumes, paint the scenery, you know. So it's almost sometimes 24/7 job, but again, I love it. And she's going into middle school now, so she's pushing away. I'm holding on, and that's my job. That's her job. As I said, that's why it's wonderful to come. Another reason why it's wonderful to come here. It's a mini vacation for me to meet all these wonderful people. And as I said, I still do commercials, and you probably, well, the last commercial I did was an Advil commercial, and I kept telling them I should be saying, oh, the pain, the pain. But they said, no, I don't think so. But so I, you know, I continue to go out on auditions, but most of my time is taken up being a parent, and I love to answer your questions if you have some, and thank you for coming here.
Okay, it's open season on us. Anything you want to ask? Anything? Yes, sir. Tell you a story about him?
Tell us a story about working with him.
Okay. All right.
Guy was...
That's a good question. I've never been asked that.
He was just, yeah, he was a wonderful person. He was smart, handsome. He had, he was a real gentleman. He had come from Zorro and was hired to, of course, be the star of this, of Lost in Space. I think it bothered him a bit that a lot of that was, his thunder was taken away by the eventual storyline that we had with the robot and Dr. Smith and Will. But he blew his top once in a while, because he and June wanted to hold hands, for instance, you know, and the network said, oh, no, 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 this is a family show. No touching. And so he was, you know, they were a little miffed, so they would just sort of look at each other longingly and try, you know, try and show their affection in that way. But Guy, after the show, went to live in Argentina, because he was so loved there because of Zorro, and they just adored him, and I think he did very well there. I mean, they, you know, he would do various personal appearances, and he was quite supported financially there. And so when he had his stroke in 1988, he came back to the United States to recuperate and have therapy, and he was doing really, really well. In fact, we did a Family Feud show together for a charity, and everybody was worried because of having had a stroke, Guy had to relearn how to talk, and he did incredibly well. And after that, about 6 months later, we had found out that he'd gone back to Argentina and had passed away in his apartment. We were all very, very, of course, very upset about it. But June tells a story, I don't know whether you know, that she was working at the Lincoln Center in Steel Magnolias. And when Guy died, she said that she felt his presence behind her, and she just knew that something had happened. And there was something about a scarf, wasn't there? Do you remember?
I don't know. I was getting heavy.
Yeah. Sorry, Mark. Hard for him. But there's something about a white scarf that he had never had, and all of a sudden a white scarf appeared in her room. I mean, that is something that he had had, and a white scarf that she had commented about and appeared in her dressing room. I mean, so she said she knew that something had happened, and they, working together, were very close, and we keep in touch with his wife and his son, who travels around sometimes to do these conventions. So I don't know what else you wanted to know, but that's it.
You through?
I'm through.
No, just Guy and I get along very well. We had some problems sometimes on the set, I'll say that. And that's not his fault, that's just what happened. It wasn't my fault either, basically. I got along with everyone on the show very well. But Guy and I, we were a pair, Guy and myself. You see, like she said, Guy Williams loved classical music. He loved good red wine.
Yeah.
And he had appreciation for classy, educated, wonderful woman. And me, I liked rock and roll, beer, and trashy ladies.
Wait a minute, I knew this, right?
So we, you know, but we were opposites in a way. But we used to go to horse races together a lot. That's my fond memories of him. We used to go out. For a while there, we weren't doing much. It was always Smith and the robot and Billy on the set. So we had a lot of time off. So we used to go out to Hollywood Park and bet on the ponies, you know, and lose a couple of dollars in those days. You didn't mind. You didn't, not much. But we had that in common, and we had other things in common that we enjoyed each other's company. And like she said, we had a beautiful wife and great kids. So it was a tragedy the way he went. I never knew, you know. You look at me like on Family Feud. I didn't do Family Feud. I wouldn't do it. They asked me to do it. I said, no, so the robot did it. I wasn't going to give me any dumb answers.
It was fun. It was for charity. It was for fun.
Where do people go for entertainment? I would have said, the toilet. I mean, I
find he was places. Afraid.
Yes. Yeah? Well, I'll tell you about the movie.
Now, where are you from?
I'm from Ireland.
From Ireland? Oh,
I won't ask you. I just, here's what I found. I was asked to do a movie, and I was really wanted to do it very badly, and especially because I knew there'd be a lot of Lost in Space fans of the classical show that would go to it and they'd want to see us in it. You know, they'd go, hey, there's Mark and there's which modern people like, you know, it would be nice for them. So I wanted to do the movie. And it was a good experience for me. I got 3 trips over to
England
with my wife and my son. He was about 7 then. It was great. But I found out that people who love this old, the classical show, most of them hate the movie. And people who didn't see the classical show so much, saw the movie, they liked it okay, because, you know, they didn't have to transfer us into those characters. I liked it. I thought it was very well acted. I thought Matt LeBlanc did a fantastic job as Don West, much better than I was in it. I don't care what anyone says, he was. People don't say that to me, but he was good. And I liked the cast, and I liked Marty was in it, and June, and Angie, and me, and Billy wouldn't do it, and Dr. Smith wouldn't do it. They said no, you know. Said, that piece of shit, is what Smith would say about it. And I said, Jonathan, come on, I was in it, you know.
Yeah.
That's
well,
not my, you know, did you enjoy it at all?
I thought the first sort of 15 minutes was great, and then they just ran out of money and made it. Wasn't it the pilot from the first episode of Austin Space sort of put together?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, they sort of ran out of money on the second half.
I want to add, I think the scene that you had with Matt LeBlanc and...
when I told him to be the pilot that you were
to... You were the most commanding presence out of the 3 in that whole scene.
Well, that's enough. That's
I agree.
That's a,
you really
thank you very much.
I thought Mark was wonderful.
I did get a lot of compliments on what I did.
I thought Matt LeBlanc looked like he was awkward standing next to you playing your part.
Anyway, I tried hard. It was a difficult thing for me to do. I had a lot of authority because I was a general, you know. Like I say, you know, I'm kind of like... Don't present myself with all that kind of authority. I'm kind of like just a guy, you know. Just
Oh, sure. Mr. Bossy. He's always telling me what to do.
Well, because I want you to sign those photographs just right. I want to tell her where to sign them, what color to use, where she signs them, how's it look, and so the people get nice autographs. By the way, one of the things we did, because we don't get to be together very often. I live in Boston. She lives in California. And so for this show, we had made up, especially, pictures, nice color pictures in black and white, that of the two of us, so that if people want, and we've been some, you know, want double signatures, they can get a picture with a double signature, hers and mine on the same picture, which is very hard to get and very nice. Usually I'll do a show and I'll sign a picture, you know, with us, be me, and then they probably won't find Mart or vice versa. So a few people are interested coming by at the table. That's why we're here, actually. I might as well put a plug in for it. We're selling pictures.
Well, let me tell you what I thought about the movie, because when they asked me to do it, I talked to the author, Akiva Goldsman.
Why do you say on Goldsmith?
What was it?
He got the Academy Award for
A Beautiful Mind. Right.
Akiva Gold. You got me wrong.
Goldsmith.
At any rate, he went.
I talked with him, and I said, "Well, what have you done with my character?" And he said, "I've made them very strong." And so I got the script, and I called him back, and I said, you know, I really like the way you portray women, because, you know, everyone has a degree, they're scientists, they're very tough, they're strong, they're witty, smart, I mean, you know, what else could you want? And the only problem with the movie was that when he told me that they were going to make it darker. And I said, why? I said, it's all right to make the women stronger, but to make the film darker really doesn't carry what we were. I mean, we were family. I can't see taking, you know, a 5-year-old to that movie, you know, or even a, you know, 8 or 9-year-old, because it is dark, and they brought a lot of the, you know, sexiness into it, which is, you know, okay. I mean, the relationship between Don and Judy. But... the beauty about the original show, I think, is that it has this almost like a non-animated cartoon in a way. I mean, there's that wonderful, beautiful light, you know, a lot of color, a lot of tenderness, within the family. And to make it that everybody is dysfunctional because they wanted to make it modern was not what, you know, Lost in Space was about. And I mean, and they lost the humor in it too. I mean, I think that even though the first year in black and white, you know, was more serious and scientific, and what it eventually became was a really a, quite a lovely family show. That that even though Jonathan, it was about Jonathan and the robot and Will. It did have some wonderful moments within. For the family, and I, that's what I get from so many fans, that the whole family was able to sit around and watch the show, and there's, you know, that wonderful nostalgia that you have when you, you know, when you remember your childhood, and you know, running home. I mean, in the reruns, the kids were running home from school to watch it, and, you know, 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock, whatever time it was, and during our time it was, you know, 7:30 and 7:30 Wednesday night. And and everybody shared, had that wonderful shared, you know, memory.
When you think of Lost in Space, if you talk about the show, consider the family and Don West, right? I would want to be, I was going to, you know, populate the whole universe.
With me?
You and Angie and June.
That's right, you weren't family.
You know, I mean, I was going to, you know, I mean... In that show, now we're going to go up there, West had a whole new thing. Particularly, we did not have a person on the show, we did not have a Hispanic, we didn't have a homosexual. Well, actually, we were diverse in our own ways.
We were diverse.
But I'm sure that up there, oh, we had all kinds of people visiting us.
That's right, we did.
We had cowboys and pirates.
Yes. Michael Rennie,
really?
The keeper.
We had, the Mexican man.
Yeah, that's right.
That guy, he was funny. Oh, so
yeah. Oh, yeah, Fritz Feld.
Yeah, we had Sherry Jackson. I could have populated her a little bit.
Good. Over my dead body, sweetie.
Oh, yeah, trying to stop me, too. That was a fun show. They're good people. Good people. Yes, sir. I'm sorry, but he was waiting a little bit longer. Yes?
What's it like working with Jonathan Harris?
Working with Jonathan?
It was great. I mean, you know, he's very professional, and he was very witty, and he came up with a lot of good things. And I was lucky on the show because I had a relationship with the family, a little bit of duty. You know, we held hands once under the tractor, ran over your hand after I kissed it. But I had a relationship with Guy and June as Don West, right? And then I also had a relationship with, which I loved doing, with Jonathan Harris, Jonathan Smith, and Don West, because I'm the one who gets his butt off the goddamn ship, you know? And so I had that going, I had all that anger going about him. And we had little things where once we got, you know, I fell on some big hole and I'm just holding on like this and I'm saying, Smith, help me. And he said, oh, it's so clumsy of you to fall in that hole, Major. Bye. You know, he was such a guy. But, and then we got to like each other and I called him Zach and we had that scene where we both kind of thought we were going to die and it was like we made up. I don't know. It was fun working with him, and he was very professional, a very good actor, and he was a joy. And as a person, you couldn't beat him, you know. I mean, he was funny, you know, and that's where I got all my wit from Jonathan. No, he was funny.
No.
He was wonderful.
He was. He's a real. Speak of him as he's a. Here, but he was a real raconteur. He could tell stories better than anybody I've ever heard. And some of them were a little off color. I don't know whether you've ever heard him, but we always had to get the kids out of the room while he was telling his stories. Jonathan was another person who I learned about survival technique in acting from Jonathan, because Jonathan came in and he knew as a villain that he was not going to last in the show. So he started writing his own words. And he was very smart and he had a lot of influence with the writers, because the writers said, oh, you know, sure, whatever you want to add, yeah, just bring it to me. And so he was the one who made, you know, the villain with the heart of gold and the coward, you know, with the heart of gold. He's the one who created that character. And he really based it, I think, on English actress of the days of old, Martita Hunt, who talked like this. And Clifton Webb, was it Clifton?
Clifton Webb, sure.
Yeah, Clifton Webb.
Cheaper by the dozen.
And yeah.
Well, half dozen.
Yeah.
Cheaper today, half dozen cheaper today.
Father of the Bride, did you? Yeah. But he, you know, he sort of based his character on that because he was a, you know, kid from the Bronx. And, you know, I mean, he was a poor kid in New York, started off as a pharmacist, can you believe that? Always had wanted to be an actor. And his father, his parents, because he was so poor, he like slept on the dining room table when they had people coming in renting out his room. And his father said, no acting for you because, you know, you've got to have something solid. And one day he just said, I'm not going to do this anymore. I want to be an actor. And that was the beginning. He started working right away and didn't stop for years and years. I mean, until the very end. And, you know, because he did voiceovers at the end. Also, one of the things that he taught me was always write your dialogue and be the last person to speak in a scene. Because that way, they end up on you. So.
I never did that.
You never did that.
No wonder.
But Jonathan
but
told
me. But he did, if you watch the scenes. I'd have the last line. Sometimes, as it was written, I didn't care. Just I'd do what they wanted me to do. I'd have the last line, and he'd just go,
poof. Right.
So they'd be on him going, too. So
indeed.
If he didn't have a word, he should have something. And that's fine, you know. You know, I show, you understand, we went from the first year, black and white, we had qualities almost like Outer Limits. We had some pretty good shows at the beginning, you know, when it was dark, when it was black and white. And then that's when he started rewriting it. We turned it over and ended up doing shows like Vegetable Rebellion, you know. And I had to talk, that show. I went to the director and I said, I got to talk to a carrot. I said, I don't even remember the actor's studio. I'm a serious actor. I said, Jesus, you're going to be talking to this Stanley Adams with an orange face and a thing coming out, a carrot. I said, you know, how the hell are you talking to a carrot? And he said, oh, same way you would to a stalk of celery. That's good direction. And so Jonathan ended up being a stalk of celery. So he could talk to the carrot.
Yeah, but
that was one of the 50 most memorable shows of all time.
Right.
Not good. Not a good show. Not
well,
good.
But
memorable. It was memorable.
Memorable, right.
When you got little, you're cutting down bushes and the oh, God. I was laughing in that. You need to see it's on film. I'm like this. On my lines in the background, I'm turning my head away, I'm laughing, biting my lip, I'm laughing in that show. You can see it on the film. They couldn't cut it out for whatever reason. I laughed my way through that show. And they
cut. I had fun during that show. I thought,
what were you? What
it
kind
was
of
very
fruit?
Amusing.
Were you a fruit or something like that?
Oh no, I wasn't a fruit.
Were you anything? Did you get something? Or
no, I don't think in that show. No, that was another one. Attack of the Monster Plants.
Oh God, I forgot about that one. That should have been one of the 50 most memorable shows too.
I became a plant, and I remember Mother saying, "Would you like some salad, dear?"
No. That's funny. That's good. So we had fun. It was, you know, it was a light, fun kind of a show. It was not, we didn't try to be anything more than we were. I mean, you know, we were just lost in space, a show from the heart, from last year and last day, nothing made sense. But at least you knew, compared to today's science fiction shows, everything you saw, it wasn't computer graphic, somebody drawing it in. You know, when you saw an animal, a monster with horns come out of this thing, you know, and all like an ape, there was a guy in that suit. As a matter of fact, they had to reshoot some shots because he was chasing June and his fly was open. That's true.
Didn't he show up in the other show, Leagues? What was it, the underwater show that...
Oh, Jesus, that's another...
What was it?
Voice
to the Bottom of the Sea.
That's
Irwin. Time. Irwin would, you know, just, you know, if you had one monster...
Recycled.
And he put a lot of money into it. He recycled it, you know, put it in another one of his shows. You always saw that. They might add a little something extra, but they were pretty
cool. I used to smoke in those days, and stage 17 was here and 16 was here. Maybe 14 and 13, I don't know. But
11, we were in 11.
Oh, great, you remember. 11 and 10?
I remember this.
Doesn't matter. We're here and we're there. In the center, you come out of the stage doors, and there was a little area where you get a drink of water, you know, a fountain, and you get, you know, a night to smoke. I'd go up there and have a cigarette, take a book break, and I'd be out there. And out of Voyage, Voyage was here and we're over here, out of Voyage came this guy, and he was all in this leafy, under, you know, like seaweed, all this dripping, all red seaweed, you know, dripping wet. And I'm standing there watching him, he's standing there, and then two guys come out, prop guys, with big dryers, and they were blowing them off to dry him up, and they sent him into our show. I couldn't believe it. Couldn't wait to work with that guy.
Well, didn't they have a problem with Lamar Lundy's costume? Because
Lamar Lundy was a one-eyed cyclops.
Yeah, one-eyed cyclops.
I was a great shot in that show, though.
Yeah, but he was so flammable because he was made out of bark, you know, that they had to keep all anyone who was smoking or any fire away from him because otherwise he would have gone up in it.
Those were the days, boy. No special effects. I mean, our special effects were firecrackers going up your butt. When you're on the set, they were just jumping all the way. You know, and
it's lucky none of us were hurt except.
Really?
Tell the story about Stu Moody.
Well, Stu Moody, he was a special effects man, and he was lining up all the cherry bombs and all that stuff around me when I'm on the set right there, you know. And I'm watching him do it, and I didn't know him that well, but I'm watching him, and I noticed he's got two fingers on his right hand are missing. And I said, Stu, how did that happen? He said, one of the bombs went off when I was setting that off a couple of years ago. I said, that's good. Yeah, and he's setting these things off all around me, you know. I didn't want to lose any limbs. Here I wouldn't mind losing them, but I didn't want to lose anything more important than that. Oh, and that's a terrible story. Any other questions?
No, tell the story about Don Matheson, who was Don Matheson, who was a guest on the show. Do you remember? And he was so afraid. Stu Moody was going to set him up with some, he had to be shot in the show, and
not my story. My story is the peanut story with Billy and the robot story when I lit him on fire.
I remember this. You told me this a long time ago. And at any rate, Don Matheson was terrified of having all these caps on him, and that he had protection, but they had caps, with the blood and all that coming out, so he was terrified about getting hurt. And Mark said, oh, no, Stu Moody, you've got to meet this guy. I mean, he's just, he's had so many years in the business. Don't worry about it. And you go up and introduce him, and you say, Stu, meet Don. And Stu goes like this without his fingers, and Don passed out.
That's a good story, but I don't remember.
I remember you telling me
I'll tell a robot story sometime if you want, tonight, today. I'll tell a penis story and that'll be it. I got a million stories. I can go on all day, believe me. Another question, though. Yes, sir.
Yeah, one of the nice bits of the show from all three seasons was the relationship
between your characters.
There was a very nice tension between
you and
your
cameraman. Well, that's what was happening in real life.
Well, sales and
she was married, I was married, we were attracted to each other, and the tension's there. You can't hide that in film. I mean, you're going to do a show like this with this beautiful woman, you know? I was pretty myself. In those days, but seriously, I don't know how she felt about it, but there was, you can't hide that. She's an attractive lady. I haven't been...
Well, that was a question about your unbelievable technique.
That's a technique. That's
it was technique, yeah.
And if it's not there, you'll make it happen. So it will be there. Unfortunately, people do that. They go away and, do movies. Now you gotta get that relationship with people. That fire is on the screen. We didn't have that fire, but if you have that on the screen, actor and actresses, they spend some time together.
Well, I think it's realistic to think, when you're with your film family more than you are your regular family, you tend to get connect with people in a different way.
Nothing bad.
And
we never had a sexual relationship.
No.
And that's what, isn't that what Clinton said?
We kissed. I never had
sexual relationships with that woman. Mark. He didn't use your name, did he?
No, he didn't.
Any questions?
It's a normal thing, I've been married to the same person for 30 some years, and thank you.
I've been married three times for 40.
Okay. My parents were married 70 years. But my father always said, yeah, to the same woman. But, you know, my mother and father, you'd get crushes. They got crushes on people. That just happens. You just don't act on it, you know. But it's normal. And you just go on with your life.
Go ahead.
Can we hear the robot story?
Yeah, yeah.
Want the robot story?
Yeah.
Okay. You mind if I tell my robot story?
Please. I think you should tell your doppelganger.
I'll end the show with my doppelganger. That's a 5 minute. That's a fast story. I will end the story with my favorite story. Some of you have heard it. Some of you I know you've heard it. Some of you people I recognize have been on other shows I've done. But you'll enjoy hearing it again because it's a good story and I tell it very well.
Not that he's
the
sure.
The robot. Didn't like the robot very much, me, you know? Didn't like the guy in the robot too much. He was kind of like, I don't know, I guess he was an okay guy and everything.
Fixated.
Okay, that's a good word. Yeah, fixated. I'll tell you, we did a show we did a show in Detroit called Kelly and Gang or something. It was a talk show, you know, local talk show. And I don't know if you were there or not.
I was
yeah,
there.
June, you, me, and Billy, and my, and yeah, the cast. And Bill, and this guy, Rob, Bobby May came to it. He was asked to come because he was portraying the robot, and he was in a suit. Nobody ever saw him, you know. He was the robot. He was in this tin thing. But he came to it, and he came, and he had himself driven to the studio in a limousine. That's how fixated he was on himself. A limousine with bodyguards. So we're doing the show, and he's talking to Kelly, the woman who's asking us questions and so forth. And he said, well, Kelly, you know, when I do these shows, I have to protect myself and my fans. So when I check into a hotel, I always check under some name that nobody would know so that my fans won't, you know, disturb me. And I cut in and I said, that's interesting, Bob, you know. I said, Kelly, I do the same thing. When I check into a hotel, I check under a name nobody knows. I check under, it's Bob May.
Oh. Bad.
Now, Bob May, this kind of guy, was, see, he's like, and he's wearing makeup. We're not even on the air yet. And he used to wear a black mask type, not a mask, but the stuff football players put under their eyes. The black, you know,
makeup.
Keep the sun out, makeup. Black makeup like a, you know, raccoon right around here, all around his eyes. Black turtleneck sweater, black pants, black shoes, and Irwin did that so nobody would know that there was somebody inside the robot. Because when he could look out through the screen, he didn't want the camera to pick up eye or any flesh or anything like that, you see? So, he's in this outfit. And Billy and I are going to lunch, and Billy said, hey, Bob, you want to go to lunch with us? And I said, oh, no. But anyway, Bobby said, oh, Billy, I can't, I'm going to the bank. I thought, Jesus, he's going to the bank like that? After lunch, we come back, and he's back, he's there, and says, oh, Bob, how did it come to the bank for you? He said, what? You wouldn't believe it. He said, I'm in line, and everybody's looking at me. You know what? They must have recognized me as the robot from Lost in Space. I said, Bob, you idiot, we're not even on the air yet, and nobody knows. But anyway, that's the kind of guy he was. So one day, we're shooting in this big thing inside where we always shot, on the desert floor, you know. And he had a scene with Billy and Jonathan, and so he's out there. Billy said, come on, Mark, let's go to lunch. Let's go on Billy a lot, and Mark, but that was Billy, it was fun. And that's where the penis story comes from. But anyway, so Billy says, let's go to lunch. He said, wait a minute. What about Bob? He said, oh yeah. Maybe Bob wants to come with us. I said, oh, maybe. So I went to Stu Moody, the prop guy. I used to get him out because he used to go on three pieces. He put his leg in, his body, arms going like this, and they put the bubble on his head. They screw the bubble on so he couldn't get out unless somebody, you know, the prop people got him out. I went to Stu Moody. I said, Stu, Bob's going to lunch with Billy and I. I'll let him out of the robot. Stu. Oh, okay, Mark. Everyone leaves the set. And I said, come on, Billy. He said, wait, what about Bob? I said, he's okay. Come on. He's okay. And about 40 minutes went by, and I'm getting feeling real jittery, I guess. I said, we better go back, you know. So we go back on the set, and he used to sit in that robot and read the trade papers with a little pen knife, little pen light, rather, and sometimes smoke a cigar. But we came back, and I looked at this, the robot, and it's all smoke coming out of it. Smoke, its whole thing, like, on flame. It was like, not flames, but smoke coming out through his things all over the place. Oh my God, I've killed the robot. I'll never, I can't live this down. And I ran over, and Billy and I unscrewed the thing. Billy couldn't live big enough. I unscrewed the thing, and I took the thing off, and he put his head through his head. Oh, Jesus, Mark, thank you. Oh, you saved my life, Mark. I said, anytime, Bob. That's one of my robot stories. I get a lot of them. Now, I'll tell you a story later, but let Marta say a few words, because I'm just, I could go on forever, couldn't I?
Well, a story that I fondly remember Jonathan telling. You probably, if you've heard it, let me know. But it's about Irwin Allen.
Oh, I heard it.
And
no, I'm sorry, Marta. Thanks.
And Irwin was famously known for being cheap. But he had an assistant, Paul Zestupnevich, who did everything for him. I mean, he did all our costumes, he designed the sets, he ran all of Irwin's errands. He did everything for Irwin, and he was probably paid like nothing. But and Irwin really used him. So one Christmas, Irwin calls Paul in, and he says, Paul, I want you to get me a gift, but I don't want you to spend more than $50. I want you to get a Christmas gift. And Paul said, well, $50, I mean, you know, it's not very much. No, $50 is what I've got. $50 is what I want you to spend. So Paul looked all over the place, and, you know, he'd bring things to Irwin. Irwin said, no, that's not good enough. No, I want something better than that. So maybe about the fifth time in, Paul brings in a box, and he has found this wonderful sweater on sale, 75% off. Irwin looks at it and goes, yep, perfect. Just wrap it up. So wraps it up, brings it back to Irwin. Irwin takes it, and he says, here, Merry Christmas. It's a true story.
Irwin, I didn't have a lot to do with Irwin, because if you remember the movie Mr. Roberts, Jack Lemmon's character was always staying away from the captain, you know, from Jimmy Cagney, and that's how I was with Irwin. I didn't think he knew I was on the show, and that was good for me, you know. But he was a little ball of fire. He had this hair like grow pads here and here, you know, and he'd, you know, how he'd bring the hair over, you know. I think he had hair going out of his ear, and I think he just brought that over. He used to, and one day, something went wrong, and he came onto that set like a ball of fire, slammed that door, and everything stops. Everyone's on the set. He walks right up, and I was doing the scene, and I hid behind one of those phony rugs, like this. And guys doing the scene with Gene. And I'm going up here. And he comes in, and he was mad at the guy. He was really mad about everybody, I guess. You know, kids here, right? And he said, Williams, you are a prick. And then he caught me out of the side, in the corner of his eye, you know, behind the rock. And he said, Garvin, you are a triple prick. And I came out and said, well, I got going over a guy for once. But God bless him. He didn't like actors, but he knew his craft. Irwin Allen. He did some wonderful, wonderful shows. And but I never had much to do with him. I didn't know him. I was never invited to his house or anything. Were you?
Well, as a matter of fact, I would, after the show, have lunch with Irwin.
Oh, that's the wrong time to have lunch with him.
I know.
You mean,
well,
after the show
hey,
was off?
Hey, I'm blonde. What can you do?
After the show was off the air?
Yeah. I'd go visit him at Warner's.
No wonder. You know, Marta used to, she was so good. Marta used to come on. I'm going to tell you a quick story on Marta. She's going to laugh at this too. Marta didn't have a lot to do sometimes in the show. And this used to, she finally, she said, what do you think, Marta? What do you think I should do? I said, go to Irm. Go to the writers. Go and tell them that you want more to do, you know? I mean, it's not right. You're a good actress. You should have more to do in the show, you know? See, I want to do that. Damn it, I want to do that. So she went, she saw the writers in Irm, and then she came back. She said, I had a good talk with them. Now I'm going to get more to do, because in that particular show, all she had to do before she talked to them was she came out on the landing and she'd go, Will? That's all she had in that show. So she went and talked to those people and they were going to write her more, and she came back and they're going to give me better things to do. And they did. And so the next show, she came out on the landing, she said, Will? Penny? That's all she did in that show. She's a good sport. She's lovable, isn't she?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll tell my doppelganger. What time are we supposed to go, Addie?
We got 15 minutes.
I'll tell my doppelganger. They call it a doppelganger. I didn't even tell doppelganger. It's just a true story that happened to me. I'll end up with that. Is there something you wanted to
do? No, any more questions, sir?
Yeah, I'll take another question, too.
Yes.
For me,
The Keeper.
Antimatter Man.
Yeah, that was good too. Yeah. Yes.
What ones are you showing tonight? Well, that's going to be up to them. they're going to pick one for us, and then do a little talking about it.
Do you want to do the one with Gerald, with the devil, and you hit me on the head? This is funny stories, man. You knocked me out, you hit me with the pants, you knocked me out.
I brought all of them with me, so I can just take what you want.
Yeah, that one's, what's it called?
Visit to Hades.
The Devil Wore Prada.
Visit to Hades, right. The Devil Wore Prada.
Then that's the one we'll do tonight.
All right. That's fun. Okay, we'll have fun doing that.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. That's easy for me. I'll just go ahead because I was, you know, that's my age. I mean, I was in college when Jimmy Dean died. And after I'd have to Rebel and, you know, East of Eden, and he was like my whole inspiration. And so I left college and went to New York because I wanted to be the next Jimmy Dean. The only problem was there were 200 other guys running around with red jackets and motorcycles too, you know. But Jimmy Dean was my inspiration. That kind of acting, Monty Clift, I loved, you know, and Brando. But Jimmy Dean was, he's the most fantastic actor I ever, to me. He had the charisma that nobody could ever have. To me. To me, it's nothing, it's just to me. Who are you?
I'm trying to think. When I was young, I always watched the old movies, like Laura and Jean Tierney, and I always enjoyed her performances. Nowadays, it would be probably Helen Mirren, Judi Dench. I'm sort of I love English movies and television, PBS. there are so many really, really wonderful actors out there that Brando, of course, you know, all of the behavioral things that he brought to acting that hadn't been tried before, and the improvisation that he there's that wonderful story that every acting teacher tells about Brando in On the Waterfront, when he's walking with Eva Marie Saint, and by mistake she's taking off her gloves and she drops one, and they're just sort of, you know, there's this low sort of subtle flirtation going on, and he, without stopping, picks up the glove and puts it on his hand, you know. And that's a very sensual behavior when you think about it. And it wasn't scripted at all. But that's the kind of thing that, you know, that
good acting.
That kind of acting, you know, from the
method.
Right. Yeah.
You can't write those moments.
And it's, you know, just remaining open, thinking outside the box, actors who do that. there's astounding actors everywhere that never become famous. And there are, we were talking about this yesterday, they are very, very good. And you just have to go to some local theater and find them. And you know, they don't have their day in the sun like, you know, the movie stars do. But, you know, they're quite extraordinary. And I go to a lot of theater and I see that. So, and you learn from everybody. You learn from, like a painter learns just by looking, going to a museum and looking at different artists. It's the same thing with acting. So you learn from a group of people, and mainly you learn from doing, and trying to figure out how you can relate your character to yourself.
I tell my story, and that's it.
Now you can tell your story.
Yep.
All right. What's this go to?
Just don't drop it in the water.
I want to go down there and tell my story.
Here, use this one.
Oh, it's come off?
It probably has. You want this one? Oh, Mark, you have a wireless.
I like a wire. Then I can do like Peter Townsend. And I go like this. Thank you. These guys are so professional. Much more professional than I. That good?
Yeah, but it's not working.
I don't need it. Yeah. All right.
Oh, now it's feedback. Now it's on. Now it's on.
So, I'll take center stage.
Here.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Thank you.
This is my favorite story. Adam Sandler is about 1966. We've been on the air for a year. And I went back to my hometown, I've been near Boston, Massachusetts, Situate. And I went to Paragon Park in Nantasket Beach. And they had the old roller coaster rides and all that kind of stuff. My daughter Melissa, who's now 44, was four. And she's on the teacup ride with her cousin. And I'm standing there, holding the sweaters, waiting for them to finish their ride, etc. And this guy, I kind of catch the eye of this guy sitting at one of those outdoor beer marks, you know, and he's sitting on the silver stool with the red leather, don't forget it, and he's kind of turning around like this stool, you know, and he's looking at me, you know, he's drinking all day long, you know, beers are going down like that, you know, and he gets out, he comes over to me, he says, excuse me, mister, I can tell you something. You look just like the guy on Boston Street. And he said, it's amazing. He said, you know, you got the same color hair, you got the kind of complexion like that, and you're about the same height and everything. Geez, you, I swear to God, you know, so, you know, if I had a camera, I'd take a picture of you and I'd send it in the Enquirer. They had that $50 contest of little lights. And I think I'd win it. I'd win it. How much you look like that guy. It's unbelievable. Jesus, you know. Oh, and then he came back and said, nice talking to you. My name's Joe. And I shook his hand and said, I'm Mark Harvey.
I think so.
I already expressed how appreciative we are of you coming to this convention and being here with us, coming in here today, and if you want to come by the thing and get a picture, we love that too. You don't have to. But if you don't, and I see you, pretend you don't know me. No, I'm just kidding. Let me say, you even got the same name. But anyway, no, really, thanks for being here.
Thank
have
you.
A great convention. This is great. This is fun.
This is fun.
Thank you.
See you later.
See you later, Juan.
Okay.
7 o'clock tonight?
Yeah.